This is a very, very difficult talk. And it's going to be hard, even though I've simplified it as much as possible, tried to make it as easy as possible, but it is an exercise in deeper consciousness. So if it's not clear, and you want more clarification, you can ask me questions which I will be unable to. If nothing else, you consider it as an inspiration to ponder and think on these things more deeply. Now, last evening, in the talk preceding this one, we just introduced the subject of consciousness. We tried to do that in terms of examples of experience that is common to all of us. And in that talk, it became obvious that we are beginners in the process of waking objective consciousness. It became obvious because much of it was a mystery to us. We didn't understand it. We didn't really know it. And it was obvious that we are not really wakingly conscious because we have so many illusions. We often have more illusions when we are beginners. Now, what we're going to do today is something that is very different. And it's not something that I'm pleased about doing. Where yesterday we spoke in terms of experience, today we have to speak in terms of the authority of others. The others in this case being the great seers of the Rosicrucian Order who have put together philosophy that we study. Now, probably some of my displeasure about doing this, that is appealing to authority, is pride, both healthy and unhealthy pride. But the main source of the displeasure is that things are not immediately experiential. It's not coming all directly from the fountain of truth within. And that is always difficult. When we are taking something that has been produced by others, and we have to look at it as authority, even if we are intuitive about it, it's still not coming from us. And thus it is not completely living. And not being completely living, it's not completely satisfying. It's something like eating partially denatured food. It isn't live and it isn't vital. But it's impossible to talk about some of these things in any other way. What I'm going to try and do is treat it tentatively as if it is all completely true, in a positive mood. And look at it in such a way that if we accept that it's true, we can see what is true in it. And later on, when it's all over, we can discard it if it isn't true. All right. Now this is going to be a different rendition of all of the material that we've looked at. I've talked about it before in other talks. It's going to be a different kind of rendition than we've ever gone through before, because what we're looking at now is consciousness. We're not so much looking at process, which is the way we've looked at it on other occasions. We're going to look at consciousness, or try to look at consciousness. Now, the Rosicrucian philosophy is an evolutionary theory. Now, that does not mean that it is Darwinian. It isn't a materialistic theory. Darwinism is a materialistic theory of how species evolve or come out of other species. The word evolution means roll out, almost something like you roll out a carpet. So the Rosicrucian philosophy implies that consciousness rolls out from something, no doubt something internal, and that it does so in a progressive manner, in an organized and planned manner, and in a reasoned manner. So we should be able, with our consciousness, since we are products and since we are internal to the whole evolutionary creation, we should be able to some extent speak from experience about it. Now, evolution occurs within time, and time is within eternity. So what this is a statement that consciousness rolls out of other consciousness, or it is a statement of consciousness building on earlier states of consciousness. That's not an unreasonable theory at all. It's not a blind process. It's not like material evolution, because everything in the spiritual evolution happens within eternity, and eternity is dense with purpose. So what we're talking about is a purposeful activity. Now, the Rosicrucian philosophy maintains that consciousness and the becoming of consciousness is a three-part activity. If you like a fancy word, it is tripartite. And there are three spontaneous activities that are going on in this evolutionary creation. Sometimes some are more manifest. One of the three is manifest more than the others, and sometimes others. Only one is relatively constant. Those three activities are the materialization of spirit. Spirit, which is materialized in broad, in worlds, or in states of being. And in microcosm, in specific bodies that relate to those states of being. So that first activity is the materialization of spirit. The second activity is the spiritualization of matter. And the spiritualization of matter is brought about through those bodies, through those microcosmic bodies in the worlds that transform the worlds into states of spiritual consciousness. And the third activity, which is the one that we're most wanting to look at, is the evolution of consciousness. The evolution of consciousness that is born in the interactions of spirit and matter. Now, when we say spirit and matter, we don't mean just light and dark. There are many, many grades of spirit and matter. Now, the whole business, we can get an idea of it by looking at an image. For example, if we take the image of an artist. An artist is a spiritual being, and that artist has a dream, a vision of great beauty, a vision of something that could be. Now, in an image or or in a dream, there is a kind of completeness, but it isn't the completeness that comes with the manifestation. But the beauty and the completeness of the dream in the dream state always presents a temptation to let that dream live internally or to live within that dream. However, usually in the creation of the dream or in the becoming of the dream, the creator is filled with the spirit. And it's a spirit to give and to share, and that means literally bringing it into manifestation. So we're talking about an artist trying to realize a conception. The clock is here, huh? Better long. We could also look at it as a scientific activity. We could say that it's not only just a giving, we could say that it's a curiosity. A curiosity to see what it really would look like if it were manifest. So the creation is both scientific and artistic. Now, in this example, the creator, the artist, draws together the necessary materials and begins to paint. First, the very fundamental shapes, the forms that are going to comprise the whole situation, and progressively, more detail is added, and as more detail is added, more meaning can be seen in the dream. Now, the materials, being just dumb stuff, don't cooperate. It's not that like they're uncooperative, though I suppose that's possible too. There is a potential picture within them, but it's asleep. And it's up to the artist to bring that painting out of those materials. Thus we can see that in the creation of a painting, there's a struggle between